continue the readings from the Khanda Samyutta on the five khandas. Again, as I mentioned last night, developing maybe very roughly along the theme of gratification, danger, and escape. So to start out, there's a couple of suttas that basically outline that structure. First one is number 26 in the Khanda Samyutta, titled appropriately Gratification. At Sawati, bhikkhus, before my enlightenment, while I was still a bodhisattva, not yet fully enlightened, it occurred to me, what is the gratification, what is the danger, what is the escape in the case of form? What is the gratification, what is the danger, what is the escape in the case of feeling? What is the gratification, what is the danger, what is the escape in the case of perception? What is the gratification, what is the danger, what is the escape in the case of volitions? What is the gratification, what is the danger, what is the escape in the case of consciousness? Then, bhikkhus, it occurred to me, the pleasure and joy that arise in dependence on form, this is the gratification in form. That form is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change. This is the danger in form. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for form, this is the escape from form. The pleasure and joy that arise in dependence on feeling, this is the gratification in feeling. That feeling is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, this is the danger in feeling. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for feeling, this is the escape from feeling. The pleasure and joy that arise in dependence on perception, this is the gratification in perception. That perception is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, this is the danger in perception. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for perception, this is the escape from perception. The pleasure and joy that arise in dependence on volitional formations, this is the gratification in volitional formations. That volitional formations are impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, this is the danger in volitional formations. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for volitional formations, this is the escape from volitional formations. The pleasure and joy that arise independence on consciousness, this is the gratification in consciousness. That consciousness is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, this is the danger in consciousness. The removal and abandonment of desire and lust for consciousness, this is the escape from consciousness. So long, bhikkhus, as I did not directly know as they really are, the gratification, the danger, and the escape, in the case of these five aggregates subject to clinging, I did not claim to have awakened to the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment in this world with its devas, Mara, and Brahma, in this generation with its ascetics and Brahmins, its devas and humans. But when I directly knew all this as it really is, then I claim to have awakened to the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment in this world with its devas and humans. The knowledge and vision arose in me. Unshakable is my liberation of mind. This is my last birth. Now there is no more renewed existence. The next one. At Sawati, bhikkhus, I set out seeking the gratification in form. Whatever gratification there is in form, that I discovered. I have clearly seen with wisdom just how far the gratification in form extends. Bhikkhus, I set out seeking the danger in form. Whatever danger there is in form, that I discovered. I have clearly seen with wisdom just how far the danger in form extends. Bhikkhus, I set out seeking the escape from form. Whatever escape there is from form, that I discover. I've clearly seen with wisdom just how far the escape from form extends. Bhikkhus, I set out seeking the gratification, the danger, the escape from feeling. Gratification, the danger, the escape from perception, from volitional formations, from consciousness. Whatever escape there is from consciousness, that I discovered. I have clearly seen with wisdom just how far the escape from consciousness extends. And again, the same phrase, so long, bhikkhus, as I did not directly know as they really are the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of these five aggregates subject to clinging, I did not claim to have awakened to the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment in this world with its devas, Mara, and Brahma, in this generation with its ascetics and Brahmins, its devas and humans. But when I directly knew all this as it really is, then I claimed to have awakened to the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment in this world. Unshakable is my liberation of mind. This is my last birth. Now there is no more renewed existence. And the third one in this short series. Atsavati. Bhikkhus, if there were no gratification in form, beings would not become enamored with it. But because there is gratification in form, beings become enamored with it. If there were no danger in form, beings would not experience revulsion towards it. And I think, as most people know, revulsion is, at least for the Samyutta, was the translation that he used for Nibbida, which we usually translate as disenchantment, and to which he has returned, I think, in the Anguttaras. He's gone back to using disenchantment instead of revulsion. Yeah, I think so. But doesn't work. So if there were no danger in form, beings would not experience disenchantment towards it. But because there is danger in form, beings experience disenchantment towards it. If there were no escape from form, beings would not escape from it. But because there is an escape from form, beings escape from it. Bhikkhus, if there were no gratification in feeling, in perception, in volitional formations, in consciousness, beings would not become enamored with it. Same for experiencing revulsion or disenchantment in relation to the danger. And if there were no escape from feelings, from perception, from volitional formations, from consciousness, beings would not escape from it. But because there is an escape from them, beings escape from them. So long, bhikkhus, as beings have not directly known as they really are the gratification as gratification, the danger as danger, and the escape as escape, in the case of these five aggregates subject to clinging, they have not escaped from this world with its devas, Mara, and Brahma, from this generation with its ascetics and Brahmins, its devas and humans. They have not become detached from it, released from it, nor do they dwell with a mind rid of barriers. But when beings have directly known all this as it really is, when they have escaped from this world with its devas and humans, they have become detached from it, released from it, and they dwell with a mind rid of barriers. So those are our three that just outline that structure of examining all of the khandhas in relation to gratification, feeling, danger, and escape. And I think it's just really useful to note, particularly that, you know, the Buddha is not denying in any way that there is a gratification in these areas, and the pleasantness that can be found within the conditioned realm, and essentially that, you know, if it weren't for that gratification, there, you know, wouldn't be the desire and lust and attachment that's associated with it. But that what the ordinary unenlightened patujana doesn't realize is the danger or the escape, the danger of impermanence, that all of these sensory gratifications, even at the level of mind, are temporary and always subject to change and alteration, and that the escape is not like escape in terms of annihilation or avoidance or vibhava tanha, but more just dwelling without delight, attachment, desire and lust for those particular, for the aggregates.
This is equivalent, but it seems strange to use the language of danger. It seems to me what he describes there would be more the downside of the attachment to the body, whereas the danger, it seems, would be more like rebirth or hell.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the Pali is that it's just translated. The danger is adinava. That's right.
Which could,
Asatadhyama.
In
the Nisarana is the escape.
In Pali, it's translated adinava, it's total, which is kind of like the dance of punishment almost.
Is that Anandjati's drawback?
That's right. Yeah.
I think I can.
That's what I think Japanese is. Drawback.
More similar to downside.
Or a bit toned down.
Yeah. Danger is quite alarming.
Yeah, it's interesting because it doesn't say that there isn't a danger.
Right.
There's a real danger. Right. So that thank you.
Do you know why, or what the language is that seems to say in permanence twice when he's talking about the downside. Impermanence and subject to change in both these phrases.
Impermanent suffering and subject to change. Yeah, it's the same in the Anattalakkhana Sutta. It's the impermanent is the anicca, and the subject to change is viparinama.
Oh, viparinama, becoming other.
Yeah. Similar flavor.
Similar flavor. I think that's a kind of a feature of a lot of rhetorical device or teaching device.
Could it be like the this might be more obvious now, but like the sankharas come into existence and they persist for a while, then they disappear, and even while they're persisting, they're changing.
That tends to be often how Abhidhamma and commentary talk about it. But I think it's probably taken that the viparinama and kind of ramp it up on ceremony.
But even like Ajahn Jeff translates anicca, which we usually say is impermanent, is inconstant.
Inconstant, yeah.
So it has that more of that subject to change feeling to it, rather than an absolute.
And he has very, very good logic for that in terms of the word nicca and anicca as not something that is more stable. So constant is inconstant is his preference. But that is subject to change.
In the sutras, they use a kind of a term maybe the Buddha's talking to the king and he's asking him about whether he loves his wife and if change of alteration came over her. Is that the same sort of thing where it's pranayama or is it?
I'm not sure.
But I mean, that's like a synonym for a great illness or death.
Yes. Because there's probably, well, just as there is in English, there's probably a whole range of various words, especially in terms of the change and alteration. But it's also, just the Buddha, as a teacher, is using these different kind of riffs on the theme to draw it on.
Yeah, I think that your comment about it being a rhetorical device, it's like when you hear people giving Dhamma talks and things, oftentimes they'll use several different words that more or less mean the same thing, but just to kind of drive the point home. it's bad, it's evil, it's horrible, it's great, it's wonderful. It's
yeah, it's just you know, permanence that that term, the technical term, Nietzsche figures so prominently in the contemplations and knowledge and vision, and always the kind of aspects of the actual liberative aspects of the teaching. Mm. Whereas Vipariyama is maybe that's more just the rhetorical aspect.
To highlight it a bit more. But yeah, certainly the Nietzsche is your kind of base, your home base.
It's all in Nietzsche.
Yeah.
I'm wondering with the Pranayama, so you choose the Pranayama and come now, if of a nature to change is subject to alteration, if he's saying that it's not currently unstable, it's not currently changing, but it has the capacity to, even if it looks like it's stable.
Yeah, even if it looks kind of stable. You don't want to be putting your bets on.
It's more like subject to change.
Subject to change.
Yeah, well, that's where the Vipariyama and Dhamma, the nature to change is. It also sounds nice in the chant. Has a good rhythm to it. Vipariyama Dhamma. Okay, move on to the next one. Number 96 in the Sanyutta, Khanda Sanyutta, entitled A Lump of Cow Dung. At Sāvatthī, then a certain bhikkhu, sitting to one side, that bhikkhu said to the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, is there any form that is permanent, stable, eternal, not subject to change, and that will remain the same, just like eternity itself? Is there, Venerable Sir, any feeling that is permanent, stable, eternal, not subject to change, and that will remain the same, just like eternity itself? Is there, Venerable Sir, any perception that is permanent, stable, eternal, not subject to change, that will remain the same, just like eternity itself? Venerable Sir, is there any volitional formations? Are there any volitional formations that are permanent, stable, eternal, not subject to change, and that will remain the same, just like eternity itself? Venerable Sir, is there any consciousness that is permanent, stable, eternal, not subject to change, and that will remain the same, just like eternity itself? Bhikkhu, there is no form that is permanent, stable, eternal, not subject to change, and that will remain the same, just like eternity itself. There is no feeling, no perception, no volitional formations, no consciousness that is permanent, stable, eternal, not subject to change, and that will remain the same, just like eternity itself. Then the Blessed One took up a little lump of cow dung in his hand and said to that bhikkhu, Bhikkhu, there's not even this much individual existence that is permanent, stable, eternal, not subject to change, and that will remain the same, just like eternity itself. If there was this much individual existence that was permanent, stable, eternal, not subject to change, this living of the holy life for the complete destruction of suffering could not be discerned. But because there is not even this much individual existence that is permanent, stable, eternal, not subject to change, this living of the holy life for the complete destruction of suffering is discerned. In the past, bhikkhu, I was a head anointed Katiya king. I had 84,000 cities, the chief of which was the capital Kusāvatthī. I had 84,000 palaces, the chief of which was the palace named Dhamma. I had 84,000 halls with peaked roofs, the chief of which was the hall named the Great Array. I had 84,000 couches made of ivory, of heartwood, of gold and silver, decked with long-haired coverlets, embroidered with flowers, with choice spreads made of antelope hides, with red awnings overhead, and red cushions at both ends. I had 84,000 bull elephants with golden ornaments and golden banners, covered with nets of golden thread, the chief of which was the royal bull elephant named Uposatha. I had 84,000 steeds with golden ornaments and golden banners, covered with nets of golden thread, the chief of which was the royal steed named Valahaka. I had 84,000 chariots with golden ornaments and golden banners, covered with nets of golden thread, the chief of which was the chariot named Vajayanta. I had 84,000 jewels, the chief of which was the jewel gem. I had 84,000 women, the chief of whom was Queen Subhadra. I had 84,000 vassals of the Katya caste, the chief of whom was the commander gem. I had 84,000 cows with tethers of fine jute and milk pails of bronze. I had 84,000 kotis of garments made of fine linen, of fine silk, of fine wool, of fine cotton. I had 84,000 plates on which my meals were served with both in the morning, served both in the morning and in the evening. Of those 84,000 cities, Bhikkhu, there was only one city in which I resided at that time, the capital, Kusawati. Of those 84,000 palaces, there was only one palace in which I resided at that time, the palace named Dhamma. Of those 84,000 halls with peaked roof, there was only one hall with a peaked roof in which I resided at that time, the hall named the Great Array. Of those 84,000 couches, there was only one couch that I used at that time, one made either of ivory or of heartwood or of gold or silver. Of those 84,000 elephants, there was only one elephant that I rode at that time, the royal bull elephant named Uposatha. Of those 84,000 steeds, there was only one steed that I rode at that time, the royal steed named Valahaka. Of those 84,000 chariots, there was only one chariot that I rode in at that time, the chariot named Vajayanta. Of those 84,000 women, there was only one woman who waited on me at that time, either a Katya maiden or a Velamika maiden. Quick footnote. Velamika as one born from a Katya father and a Brahmin mother, or a Brahmin father and a Katya mother. Of those 84,000 kotis of garments, there was only one pair of garments that I wore at that time, one made either of fine linen or of fine silk or of fine wool or of fine cotton. Of those 84,000 plates, there was only one plate from which I ate, at most, a measure of rice with a suitable curry. Thus, Bhikkhu, all those formations have passed, ceased, changed. So impermanent are formations, Bhikkhu, so unstable, so unreliable. It is enough, Bhikkhu, to feel revulsion towards all formations, enough to become dispassionate towards them, enough to be liberated from them. Just a very nice sutta that drove at home. You can have pretty much every pleasure that is possible for a person to have to the maximum extent and 84,000 times what you need. and still, they are all subject to change. They all pass, they cease. And in the past, from the past, those no longer exist. I find that's just a very useful reflection, just as an ongoing reflection. It's just, you know, sometimes we are able to kind of dwell in our memories of what used to be good, what was nice, the way it used to be, what was satisfying, what was good, and that provides a sort of measure of pleasure, but really, it's gone. Yesterday is gone, all the pleasures from yesterday or earlier today, anything that's not happening right now has passed. It's over. So it's not a place. It's, as he says, so unstable, so unreliable, enough to become disenchanted and dispassionate.
There's also something interesting in there. This bhikkhu is looking for something from in the context, and the Buddha not only answers him, in the negative, you can't find it, but actually the he says, basically, it's a good thing that you can't find it. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm reading it right or not, but it sounds like the implication is that if there was anything permanent, it would still be unsatisfactory, and you would be stuck with this unsatisfactory thing for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And that would not, you know, so being actually, you know, since everything does change, then, you know, then it can actually all stop.
Right, that if it were, if there were even this much individual existence that was permanent, stable, eternal, then the living of the holy life for the complete destruction of suffering could not be discerned.
What's individual existence then?
Individual existence would be
Atabala.
Atabala.
I found it was interesting. He used that phrase in there, but the permanence of the universe of all eternity.
Mm.
Is there anything permanent like the universe? How it's eternal?
And that will remain the same, just like eternity itself.
Right. And take exception to that as well.
Mm.
Eternity. Something eternity is permanent.
I thought it was the idea of eternity is what I was trying to say. The idea of something permanent, like what we imagine of eternity.
That's kind of how I was reading it, is it sort of like that there is any kind of...
As if it were
the same, just like eternity is eternal. What eternity is eternal. That's kind of how I was... The reading of the language, anyways, how I read it. Okay. Oh, one more question.
Is there any significance to the names of the steed and the chariot, which I'm not familiar with?
The bull elephant Uposatha.
Oh, yeah, that's one.
The royal steed named Valahaka. I don't know Valahaka. Or the chariot named Vajayanta. Uposatha is our... What does Uposatha actually translate as? It's a, you know, observance day, but I don't know how.
Observance. Vajayanta is the... That comes up somewhere else. Something belonging to the gods. I can't remember.
Maybe, I think it's something like when Mahamogalanda's the realm of the 33 or something. Come and see the Vajrayanta palace.
Mm-hmm.
He makes it rumble in his toe.
Yeah, there weren't any footnotes to those particular names that explained why they might have been particularly named that. Okay.